Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back. And today we have our very own Nathan Diamond. Some of you know Nathan, of course, very well known in Washington throughout the political world. And Nathan has been a part of the OU, a major part of the OU for many years. And we're going to call on Nathan on a regular basis to give us some real insight into things that are going on in Washington and around the world. So, Nathan, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you. And good morning from the United States' capital.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Well, listen, today we want to concentrate on a few things. The first thing, of course, is really the whole story of Gilad Shalit. And it's been so much press written about this. Should we do it? Shouldn't we have done it? The first question I want to ask you that I'm just trying to understand politically, what happened now in the world that created the momentum to get it done?
That's an excellent question. And you probably get a lot of answers from a lot of different people. But what seems to have come together is that Hamas wanted to assert its role, assert its leadership, which it was not playing a leading role for the better part of the past 6 to 8 months. Prime Minister Netanyahu was working hard and very persistently since he came into office to try to get a deal done. And the Egyptians also, with their new regime after the coup that overthrew Mubarak, the current Egyptian regime also wanted to show, I think, on the world stage that they could play a role that the broader international community would see as constructive. So from my point of view, those are probably three key factors that brought it all together just a few weeks ago.
Now, you know, from a political point of view, I mean, Do all three emerge right now as a winner? I mean, Hamas, Egypt, Netanyahu.
They seem to have all emerged as positively to their home constituencies. In other words, Hamas definitely, with getting all the prisoners out that came as part of this deal, Hamas looks good to their constituency, and in contrast to the Palestinian Authority leader Mahmoud Abbas, who looks very weak right now because he's on the outs with the Obama administration, and also has nothing going on with Netanyahu and the Israelis. Netanyahu, I mean, there continues to be a debate within Israeli society about whether the price was worth it or not, and that's a debate that'll go on forever. But overall, the Israeli society is very happy that Gilad Shalit is out, even while they debate the price. The Egyptian regime, it's a little more murky because no one knows where Egypt is going, but on the international, the other countries, the other leaders, whether it's President Obama or European leaders, et cetera, view what Egypt did as positively.
Okay, but we know that, you know, politics in general, but in the Middle East in particular, events change every day, or, you know, rapidly. So what could happen to make this really change completely? I mean, you know, some dramatic event.
To make what change completely?
Well, you know, the whole Shalit. I mean, for instance, they talk about, well, let's say one of the people they release, one of the terrorists, becomes a suicide bomber, and God forbid, and tries to do something in Israel. Would that change things overnight? Or, I mean, what would happen?
Well, I think things for... No one has been fooled outside of the Palestinian community that all of a sudden Hamas is a benevolent entity. In fact, even within a week or so after Shalit was released, Hamas was launching some rockets from Gaza into Israel. So Hamas is still anathema to the West and the civilized world at large. Again, even though the release of the prisoners did help their standing with their base constituency in Gaza and in the Palestinian territories. If the tragic scenario that you ask about, and one of these released terrorists again committing terrorism, would happen, that would be something that Netanyahu's critics would use against him politically. This is just guessing on my part. My sense from talking to people at Israel and from reading the Israeli press is that while people are worried about that sort of thing happen, they seem in general to still think that in terms of the psyche and the culture of Israeli society, that getting Shalit out was the right thing to do. This coming weekend, interestingly enough, as we're talking in the middle of the week, this coming weekend, the New York Times, the Sunday New York Times magazine, is going to have a very, very lengthy article by Ronen Bergman, who's a writer for Yediot in Israel, about this whole issue of the Shalit release and the price and the debate in Israel.
Okay, let's just kind of go through that quickly for a moment, for maybe people just want to understand it. So we have two sides, you know, the yes and the no. First of all, Gershon Baskin, he's emerged as the major player to do this. Who is he, and how did he get that role? And so what is the position of those people who say, yes, it was correct, we maybe paid a high price, but it was worth it. So let's talk about that for a minute.
So Gershon Baskin is we would characterize him as a left-wing, activist on the Israeli political spectrum. He was born in America, moved to Israel in the 70s, and has worked on Israeli-Palestinian coexistence and relations, etc., over the years. And he happened to be at a conference in Egypt before Shalit was even kidnapped, and met some key Hamas people who he was in touch with over a period of time, and stayed in touch with, and then in the course of the past couple of years, when Hamas, after they had taken Shalit and were then interested in making some sort of deal, they actually contacted Gershon Baskin, and then Baskin spoke to people in Prime Minister Netanyahu's office, and that's how he got in the middle of it.
So
and
he was
how
kind
he
of
became,
like in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, so to speak. And so he became an intermediary in between the Netanyahu government, which won't talk to Hamas directly, and Hamas.
Now, did this give him any political stature in Israel, by the way? Is he becoming a folk hero because of this, or what?
To be perfectly honest, I don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. So who are the people who are supporting this? Okay, you know, obviously, you know, he's in favor of Netanyahu. I mean, on that side of the spectrum, the political spectrum, I mean, who are the people actually saying, yes, this was the right thing to do, and it was the correct thing to do?
Well, in terms of the government, not only the prime minister, but the head of Defense Minister Barak, the head of the Shabak, the security services, Yoram Cohen, the entire security establishment basically lined up and said that they approve of this. Interestingly, Prime Minister Netanyahu's current national security advisor, General Amidror, who before being in that role, not talking about this deal, but talking about prisoner swaps in general, spoke critically about prisoner swaps. Obviously, as Netanyahu's national security advisor, played a role in these discussions, and one presumes, thought that this was somewhat worthwhile doing, so the security establishment and a lot of people in just mainstream Israeli society see it as positive, and predominantly because as we know, Israel is a society where you have a mandatory draft, where everybody has a family member or someone who's close with them who is serving or has served or is going to serve in Tzahal. And there's a deeply ingrained ethic and belief that no one's going to be left behind. Certainly nobody is going to be left behind who's alive. If you want the soldiers in the IDF to be putting their lives at risk, it's a great source of strength for them and for their families to know that there's this level of commitment on the part of the Israeli government, the Israeli society, which, from an Orthodox perspective, from a Torah perspective, we would trace back to values with regard to Pidyon Shvuyim and other concepts about valuing life that we know very well.
Right. Okay, but there's, you know, obviously even when it comes to Pidyon Shvuyim, there are different opinions and you know, about how we deal with it. Then we have the people on the other side who say, you know, no, this was a mistake, and they're very vocal about it. So why? What's their position?
Yeah.
Why
are they most saying recently, most recently, I think just yesterday or the day before, former Defense Minister Moshe Arons wrote a column in the Jerusalem Post expressing that point of view. And as you just mentioned, Steve, first of all, they'd have a basis in the halachic sources as well, which in discussions about Pidyon Shvuyim talk about how you should not, so to speak, overpay for ransoming captives. They're worried with a very reasonable and logical view that this is just a greater incentive for Hamas or for other terrorist organizations to abduct Israeli soldiers or others in order to get their prisoners out of jail and to take advantage of this culture and this ethic that we just described. So they apply that sort of cost-benefit analysis, which is also values-based, and come out in a different place.
And what do you think if you kind of look at the Israeli population? It would seem to me that the overwhelming majority of people really believe that, despite the price, it was worth it because he's one life and he's an Israeli soldier and he was everyone's son. Do you get that sense or not?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
And Gilad Shalit's parents worked as you would think any parents would to really make that point of view a broadly held point of view in Israeli society, and not just in Israeli society, in the global Jewish community. I mean, you had here in the United States and in Jewish communities around the world a consistent attention being paid to this issue.
Right, and yet Nathan, the Baumel family, he recently passed away, the father, but he spent his entire life dedicated to trying to get his son back when he probably knew that the chances were that he were probably not alive anymore, and yet he never was able to do it.
Yeah.
Which is really quite something, and you wonder why they couldn't negotiate at least getting those people back, even if they're not alive, at least getting their remains so they can have a proper burial.
And by the way, there's a lot more that needs to come out. I mean, I've heard from some sources of mine here in Washington and also in Jerusalem some accounts of the efforts that were made to find Gilad Shalit before the deal was made. In other words, it's not that Netanyahu and his government were only interested in the negotiation route. They were persistently trying to pursue ways to go in and rescue him, by some sort of military operation or what have you. But as came out on the day or so of the release, they didn't actually know where exactly he was being held, and there were other obstacles to them actually going in and getting him themselves. But there's a lot of the story still to come out about.
What I think is important, Nathan, is that, in other words, what's coming out is clear is that they didn't know where he was, which is unheard of. I mean, like, you think about this, and you know our perception of Israel and their intelligence, and here is somebody just a few miles away, and they didn't know where he was, and so it really comes about that, well, Hamas was able to keep this under wraps. Besides that, they also were able to do it in such a way that the Israeli army knew, and the Israeli government knew, that even if they located him, they probably never could get him out alive. Which really, you know, was kind of astounding, you know, compared to, you know, when we think back to the glory days of Entebbe and things like that.
Right.
So a lot of things have changed in the whole picture of what happened here. And, you know, as I said before, it's always a fluid situation. In Israel, it's always a fluid situation. Things change overnight, things that we never thought of, and new things are going to come about. But I do think that this, the Gilad Shalit, the release of Gilad Shalit, was a very positive thing for the psyche of the Israeli population in general. Talking about that, I mean, talking about another person who obviously we think about a lot, and that's Jonathan Pollard. And recently there's been some talk about a quote from the Vice President Biden, about this. So what happened? People ask me, I'm not exactly sure of the story, so maybe you can enlighten us.
Sure. The story broke several weeks ago, right around Rosh Hashanah time. Vice President Biden was in Florida doing a campaign-style private meeting with a group of rabbis from across the Jewish religious streams in South Florida. What was reported in the New York Times was that in the course of that meeting, Biden volunteered some comments about Jonathan Pollard and his prospects for getting out of jail. And the Times quoted Biden as saying, literally, that Pollard would get out of jail over my dead body, and spoke very, very harshly and hostily toward Pollard. Now, it was subsequently made clear that Biden did not actually use those words of over my dead body, but the sentiment that was conveyed. Was indeed, and I spoke to people who were in the room for the meeting, the sentiment that Biden conveyed was that Pollard really, in Biden's view, does not deserve being released, except perhaps maybe in the context of, you know, a grand Israeli-Palestinian peace deal, which is really, you know, the holy grail for American diplomacy in the Middle East, and if sealing that deal would require, you know, would it all involve Pollard getting clemency, then that might be something that that would be considered. Anyway, this was reported in the New York Times, caused a whole fuss, and it just so happened in terms of timing that shortly thereafter, the vice president was hosting, he annually has a reception in Washington around Rosh Hashanah time for Jewish community leaders, and that reception took place just less than a week after this event and this report came out, and a number of the leaders who were there requested a meeting with the vice president to discuss this, the issue of Pollard and clemency, in more detail. It's important to note that the request and the support, the request for the meeting and the support is across the board, from the Orthodox community, the conservative community, the Reform Jewish community, the secular organizations, whether it's the President's Conference or the ADL, et cetera. Everybody's on the same page. And in fact, that meeting with the Vice President, we understand, is going to take place later this month.
Okay, so do you think the story really has more to it, or do you think it's going to be pushed aside?
I think we're going to have to see how that meeting goes. Getting Pollard clemency has been an uphill fight for many years. The American intelligence community leadership is adamantly opposed to his release under any circumstances. Pollard's lawyers and advocates have strengthened their efforts in the past year or two by getting many new prominent former government officials, including former senators and secretaries of state and attorneys general, to sign on to the notion that he should get clemency. So from that perspective, the campaign for his clemency has strengthened. But this is one of the situations where, at the end of the day, there's only, you know, the Constitution, the United States Constitution literally gives the power and the decision for this to one single individual, and that's the President of the United States. And so that makes it a unique challenge.
So in this political environment that we're in now, Does it bode better for clemency or not at all?
You mean the fact that we're going into a presidential
election? Yeah, a presidential
election, sort of
thing? Coming up, right?
My personal point of view is that the political environment cuts in both directions, so it sort of cancels each other out. Because on the one hand, you might say, well, this would, you know, releasing Pollard would perhaps help Obama's standing with some in the Jewish community. On the other hand, it might give people who are not particularly connected to the Jewish community but are concerned about intelligence and national security issues a reason to criticize Obama. So he might win over some people, but also lose some other people.
And your view, by the way, I mean, just kind of getting back to Gilad Shalit, I mean, personal opinion, I mean, right thing to do or wrong thing to do?
In my personal point of view, I come down on the side that it was the right thing to do because of the culture and the ethic that that Israel has built, in which we discussed before about everybody serving in the IDF and the motivation and the sentiment and the strength that comes from everybody in Israel sort of being in it together.
So I guess time will tell, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But Nathan, thank you for coming on the program, and we'll be talking on a regular basis as events develop and things change, as we know they will. And I'm sure everyone's going to really be eager to hear about some of your opinions and your little political insights that you have and the scoops that you know, spending your time in Washington and having your ear to the ground. So thanks a lot on the whole issue of Gilad Shalit and also a little bit about Jonathan Pollard. Have a great day. Bye-bye.